our principal house, and it still is. We had five parishes and nine priests living there at St. Mary's in Balboa.
Okay.
And, of course, the main parish, St. Mary's there, and Sacred Heart, all in English-speaking Zonians.
Mm-hmm.
And Paraiso was a congregation of mostly Panamanian people, mm-hmm. and a lot of islanders, the blacks from the island, you know.
Yes, sir.
They make it such a bulk of the Panama population around the capital city. Mm-hmm. They all come over to build the canal, their grandparents, and then the U.S. wanted to repatriate them all, offer them free passage back to where their island, Jamaica, or mm-hmm. Barbados, all them places, you know. But most of them decided to stay there. So they sunk the roots and raised the kids. All the kids were born Panamanian, speaking mm-hmm. English and Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And we always had a lot of fun ourselves. They call it, even though the people from Barbados are Bajans.
Mm-hmm. Bajans.
And we call their language Bajan. And also they themselves call it Wadi Wadi.
Uh-huh.
So you speak, and we had all kinds of jokes, Spanish jokes, English jokes, half and half jokes. And that, some of them, you got to have the right audience. You don't even get a titter out of anybody.
Right.
But that's all my work down there was half and half, mostly Panamanians, really. Because mm-hmm. out of Balboa, I worked in Chiriquí, in the western end of Panama,
mm-hmm.
right on the Costa Rican border.
Okay.
Both sides, the Atlantic side and the Pacific side. Because the real Panamanians, the Zonians, they don't talk about the other side. It's mm-hmm. the next side.
Uh-huh.
In fact, Shorty and Slim, Shorty and Slims have these records. They are selling them downstairs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And their title is Shorty and Slim. And it's really, it's good taste of Panamanian culture, if you'd call it that. Mm-hmm. The mixture of English and Bajan from the islands, mm-hmm. Jamaican, Spanish, and English. And they have one of their albums, they call it The Next Side.
Uh-huh.
Because down there, you know, the black people, they don't ever, in Balboa, you don't talk about Colon as the other side.
Uh-huh.
That's the next side.
Okay.
Yes. And that's the name of one of their albums, The Next Side.
Uh-huh.
All the differences. So my career down there in Panama has been mixed half and half and half, but predominantly is Spanish.
Okay. Father Kennedy, when did you first go to Panama? I mean, when did you...
1949, right after ordination. I was ordained priest in 1949 up in Philadelphia.
Okay. Did your family have a tradition of serving in the priesthood?
Always priesthood. My parents were both Irish immigrants from Ireland.
Okay.
Tipperary for my father and County Mayo, my mother.
Okay.
And they never heard of Panama.
Uh-huh.
And I never heard of it either until I met a Vincentian priest who encouraged me to go to the seminary. And then I went to that seminary run by Vincentian fathers, and of course they pushed me because
uh-huh.
I didn't want to be a seminary professor myself. I wanted to be a foreign missionary. I was aiming for China the whole time.
Oh, okay.
And the year I was ordained, 1949, Mao Zedong moved in and kicked all the Christian missionaries out.
Uh-huh.
So I never got to China. I've always wanted to still go to China if I were healthy enough, okay. young enough.
And what is distinctive about the Vincentian order? Does it have a particular...
Well, it's an order that was founded about 1800 and, oh, not 80, excuse me, 1580 were founded in Paris in France. Mm-hmm. So basically, you'd call it one of the French religious orders of the Catholic Church, because our culture is our spiritual exercise and our prayer books and all those things, they're all originally in French.
Mm-hmm.
And we had it in our seminary training. We were given these French books. So you read, first of all, learn French, then mm-hmm. read these books in French. So that's what we all did. So we have that French taste to our customs in our mm-hmm. Vincentian Father's order.
Mm-hmm.
And it fit right in with the Latin taste too, with the Latinos, who are of course, the Panamanian Spanish. They speak good Spanish, very good. Mostly roots in Colombia, because Panama was a part of Colombia until 1903. So I went down, when I was ordained, right away they told me, you're going, five of my classmates went with me. They sent us to Panama. We went first to Costa Rica to leave to learn Spanish. Each one of us to live with a Costa Rican priest, mostly in little villages where we'd be exposed to the culture and meet real people, not school teachers, just mixed and study on the side. They gave me made my acquaintance with a local school teacher, and she'd come in every morning to the parish house and go over grammar with me. And then from mixing with her, and in 3 months I was able to preach in Spanish. And after 6 months, they said, okay, back down to Panama, vacation's over, before Costa Rica was there. You ever been to Costa Rica?
No, sir. That's,
it's right next to Panama. It's a beautiful little country. And the Ticos, we call them the Ticos. They were very good to me. The priest I lived with, he's a real holy man, but at the same time, a lot of fun, good jokes. And he became a bishop, in fact, and he died 5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Father Cotto was his name, C-O-T-O, Alfonso Cotto. But from him and the lay period, the lay people, that's the best way to learn language. I get all these commercials on TV, I get mad, Rosetta Stone. Join Rosetta Stone, you'll learn to speak. You'll never learn it, that's the same thing we've been doing for years, buy a textbook and try to, you can't learn it just from reading a book. The only way is to mix with the people.
You got to go.
Now these days of young people traveling so much, a lot of kids are learning, as teenagers, they're learning foreign language. Summer programs, and their parents let them travel now by themselves. So they go to Indonesia and India and South Sea Island, and any country in Latin America. So that's after that Costa Rican experience, right into Panama, and work with the Panamanian people, not the canal zone. I worked 300 miles west, the part of Panama that's abuts on Costa Rica.
Okay.
We have missions both Atlantic and Pacific side. The next side and our side and the next side.
Okay. What were social conditions like, Father Kennedy, when you first went to Panama?
It was poverty, but no real indigence. The canal zone, of course, that was just like a little slice of the state of Delaware or New Jersey or Texas, a lot of Southerners. You hear it around here, the canal zone people, a lot of them speak real Southern, you know, like. So our life in the canal zone was like living in Texas or Alabama, Florida, and it wasn't much different, but a lot of Americans ended up marrying Panamanian girls, and I was happy to see that. And nowadays, these reunions now, you go to where they're selling stuff, the vendors. They're selling all what they sell from Panama. And when they get together and have a drink or two or a few beers, all they want to talk about is Panama, not the canal zone. They remember Panama, the Republic. Most of them still own summer houses up on the beaches in Panama. And they spend all their vacation time, of course, but all the back to the States. But after a while, as the kids grew up, they didn't know anybody back in the States. They grew up being Panamanian themselves. All the kids speak perfect Spanish. All the American kids or her parents, they come here with their parents to the reunion. And I think the Panamanian people as a whole, they all of caramba. We're glad to get rid of those gringos. Maybe so. Panama has aspirations to be their own country. They realized, but they didn't like having a foreign flag flying over part of their soil.
Yeah.
That's the only natural. It gets paid up, natural vision. But when the Americans left, the Panamanians, they miss us. They miss the gringo presence down there. Even they won't admit it openly. And so many people back in the States All they want to talk about, like at this reunion, mm-hmm. they want to talk about Panama.
Right.
And that magazine that comes out every 2 months, just full of stuff about Panama. It's written in English, but they have a few pages in Spanish, but it's distributed in the States with mm-hmm. ex-Zonians. And, it's Panamanian intonancy. So the bulk of my work down there was with Panamanian people. Uh-huh. And which was good because I learned Latin culture and to be with them. And they always ask me, Padre, you got any new jokes? Always, yeah, I have, but I can't tell them in church.
Really. What were some of the challenges being a priest in Panama in 1949?
Well, there was no, some of the Latin countries like Mexico had a revolution. A lot of anti-clericalism. In fact, in Mexico, they shot and killed a lot of priests and mm-hmm. nuns during the teen years, 1910 to 1920.
Oh yeah, the revolution.
During the 20s, yeah. The revolution time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I never felt any of that. In fact, when the big riots in 1964, mm-hmm. of course, the Panamanians kept rioting, and we had 9 priests there at St. Mary's, but and I was on the bishop's Episcopal committee. In fact, he appointed me vicar, the Episcopal vicar for the churches of the canal zone. And of course, in that way, the military, U.S. military, all those bases, mm-hmm. and the Catholic and non-Catholic chaplains of the U.S. Army and Navy were down there. They were not obliged to the bishops in the States, because there's a military bishop in the States, they call him the military ordinary. Hmm. He's in charge of all the Catholic priests in all the service bases around the country and overseas. But in Panama, they made an agreement right at the very beginning that the chaplains in Catholic or Protestant, whatever they were, Jewish, one of our great Jewish pastors down there, Rabbi Witkin, Nate Witkin, lived right across the street from us in Balboa. Jew, he's a wonderful man. And a little house right by where the YMCA used to be in Balboa. Mm-hmm. An American fighter pilot ran out of gas while he was attempting a landing at Albrook. And he one more half a cupful of gas would have got him, but his motor died. Just he was crossing about where the bridge is now. The bridge wasn't built yet.
Okay.
And he went down and smashed, almost hit St. Mary's Church.
Oh, wow.
But he fell 200 yards short of it in his own, the pilot's, in Rabbi Witkin's house.
Mm.
It was at daytime.
Wow.
She was a nice lady. I know her well. She was killed. And poor Rabbi Witkin, oh, he was our brother. She was killed instantly and the pilot. Mm. And but all those chaplains, the Catholics especially, were not obliged to, like, to get the permission for mixed marriages, you know, mm-hmm. Catholic and a non-Catholic. You have to go to the bishop and get the written release. Mm-hmm. But they were told, no, you don't go to a Panamanian bishop. I mean, excuse me, you don't go to a U.S. bishop, because you are all under the Bishop of Panama now. Officially, they declared it through Rome. And all the American priests in Panama would be obligated to the bishops of Panama.
Mm-hmm.
So my job was to be sort of, I wasn't a bishop, but I had all the powers of a bishop mm-hmm. in the zone.
Okay.
And any of those priests wanted to get a dispensation for a mixed marriage, they'd have to come to me to get it.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to know a lot of good guys, the chaplains mm-hmm. who were down there. And so that's how we were quite intimately united, and since I was Episcopal vicar, I was on the bishop's committee mm-hmm. for the Episcopal vicar of each area in the whole country, the diocese. Mm-hmm. There was 8 of them, all told.
Okay.
Panama, Colón, Chitré, mm-hmm. David, and Chiriquí, Boca del Toro. I was always at those meetings because I was on the rank, even though I didn't wear the purple like they did. I had the Episcopal faculties that they all had.
Okay.
So we got real close, and I was very close to the Panamanian church, which was good, because then that way the bishops of Panama were, some of them before, they wouldn't go to the Ganaldo, but then they, the bishops themselves made the effort to learn English. Mm-hmm. And they'd come over to the Ganaldo, we'd preside, we'd invite them to preside at weddings, mm-hmm. or anniversary, or any special parish function. And they'd come over, and then they were thrilled to come to the Zalt. First, really look, a real good look any of them ever had in his own. They had never gone on to a military base. Mm-hmm. They didn't know what it was like, but great relations sprang up then, mm-hmm. even despite the riot in '64. I was at a meeting of the bishops of Panama. It was on a weekday evening, and I was dressed. Sometimes we adopted down there, wearing a guayabera, this mm-hmm. shirt, yeah. with a little cross. I looked for my chaplain's cross. I thought I had it with me. I don't have it. To put on your collar.
Yeah.
That was our only priest insignia. My first years, we wear the sotana, you know, the long, but the cassock.
Yeah.
You'd go to the movies, to the store, go everywhere with that in the sotana, following the custom of the Spanish priest.
Yeah.
But around 1954, Bishop Clavel, Panamanian, auxiliary bishop of Panama, says, Padre Kennedy, our priest, they're always after me to let us dress like you priests on the canal zone. Not without the long cassock.
Right.
Will you come to the bishop's meeting and wear a guayabera and wear that cross and show the priest how you dress on the canal? So I was a model.
Okay.
And the priest, uh-huh. yeah, we want. And from that day on, they all started dressing like we do. Little cross on the collar.
Cross on the collar.
Sometimes a cross on a chain.
Uh-huh.
But there's some identification. And that was a great breakthrough. Mm-hmm. So the Panamanian, we got to know the Panamanian priests. Mm-hmm. They got to know us. And the same with our people. Our congregation got to have, like we mentioned, so many marriages. I remember coming back from, maybe it was that same meeting, one of those meetings. I came back from the meeting in Bishop McGrath's house. He was an American born of a Costa Rican mother, an American father, raised right there in Panama. And he became Archbishop of Panama.
Mm.
Mark McGrath, about 6'6", big, real gringo. The people loved him because he was one of those American kids that speak better Spanish than English. But I went to the meeting and I went to the bishop's meeting because I had to dress like a bishop, you know, with a white collar.
Yeah.
And I'm back about 9 o'clock at night. I come driving back through Cinco de Mayo, where it was a big the Panamanian Airlines building there, heading back to Balboa, and I got to the crossroads, 4th of July Avenue.
Yeah.
And suddenly my car was surrounded by teenagers, Panamanians, gringo, gringo, gringo. And I said, I killed it. And then there was this gringo driving. So I few short cuss words in Spanish. I don't know. I said, carajo, yo soy más panameño que tú. Ábreme la cara. Oy, perdone, padre. When I said carajo, they knew I was a Panamanian. So they let me through.
Yeah. Wow.
No problem. That's the way it went.
That's the way it went. Were there, how did your life, you talked about really, in some ways, working both in Panama and also in the zone.
Yeah.
What were some of the differences between the two areas in your experience?
Well, of course, I had canal zone privileges. I could buy in the canal zone commissaries. And once, when people in Panama, I Padre, will you buy me this, buy me that? I was breaking the law, I guess. But I bought things in the commissary, the big old commissary right there in Balboa, the Stephen Circle,
uh-huh.
and in different places, junk little things, you know. The nice new razor, I might want to buy an electric razor and things like that were expensive in Panama. But the only big crossover was that. And I'm sure a lot of the lay people were doing the same thing.
Okay.
A lot of them had in-laws in Panama.
Uh-huh.
Sure, so they've had some beautiful families, marriages came out of those. There are some of them down here. I've been in today, I saw a lady and a guy here at lunchtime, and he identified himself, John, what was his name, John? they all come up to me. They know me because they know me for 50 years. But they were little kids, and I don't know, I recognize them.
Right.
So they all want to say hello. Remember those days 50, 60 years ago? Mm-hmm. The Panamanian wife and their half Panamanian kids and all that. And that aspect, the family level, they got along great. The political level was something else. The Panamanian politicians simply bang, gringo, go home. Gringo, go home. Gringo, go home. But don't take your money. And but otherwise, the relationship, people to people, was very pleasant. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, people would apologize to me, Father, I'm sorry for the way somebody in the paper yesterday said such and such and such about the Americans. When they go, gringo, go home. Father, that's not us. We love you. Mm-hmm. We love you. That's not the great bulk of the Panamanian people are very happy with the Americans. And that's the way it was. But I worked full-time in Chiriquí, mm-hmm. Bocas del Toro. And even when I was living there in Balboa, Episcopal Vicar, I was over in Panama City more than I was in the zone. Mm-hmm. My contacts with the zone chaplains was real. And it was very helpful, helpful for them, helpful for me, because they had me as a contact with the bishop in Panama, because some of them never learned Spanish, and they relied on me a lot, so both sides got along real good, real good.
Uh-huh, okay. Did you, what were some of the spiritual challenges for people in the Canal Zone?
Yeah. Well, we go all the same spiritual challenges. We call it the church regulations about Holy Day Mass and things like that. And they function in Panama just like in the States. Mm-hmm. Though the Panamanian people as a whole, there was a lower percentage of assistance at the religious services. The Americans, of course, in the Canal Zone, the Americans, I say a third maybe, quarter to a third of the, mm-hmm. like the people that are here at this reunion.
Yes, sir.
Like, for example, just last year, Mass, we'll have our Mass tomorrow afternoon at 4:30. Mm-hmm. It's a Sunday, the Sunday Mass is the day before, the eve, and it's a valid Mass for Sunday. Mm-hmm. We had, in the big ballroom, we had over 600 people at Mass. Mm-hmm. And my good friend Bill Wilbur, who's pastor of the Gamboa Union Church, he had a very small group. And after we finished in the ballroom, Bill took over with his group, and it was much smaller, not even half of what they had. Mm-hmm. But so the Panamanian Catholics were sort of, in a way, challenged mm-hmm. to prove that we are Catholics and we're gonna keep our religion, and we would encourage them, give good example, show our Panamanian brothers and sisters that we love them and we're all one church, mm-hmm. and try to be faithful to your convictions. And you never know what good you can do by just good example. Mm-hmm. I remember one couple I married, father and mother and five kids. They were from Arkansas. Hmm. And they had never seen a Catholic in their life. But this man of the family, the breadwinner, he was invited to his neighbor out in Los Rios, one of the sections here outside Panama City. Outside, but part of the zone, mm-hmm. for a birthday party or something, and I was invited to. And he came up to me, Father Kennedy, can I call you Father? Everybody does. Said, I've never seen or talked to a Catholic priest in my life, but I'd like to talk to you. I've always been interested in what are these Catholics like? What do they believe in? The Catholics have always been a mystery to me. Maybe it is to a lot of people. But he came to me at St. Mary's in the Rectory, and he started coming for a weekly session. Then his wife joined him and the kids. 6 months later, the whole family was baptized into the Catholic Church. And I said, well, what got you interested in the Catholics? Said, my neighbors, the people whose party you came to that night, I never saw them miss Mass on Sunday. And I remember back in Arkansas, we had one Catholic family in my town. And every Sunday, they'd get up real early and get in their car, and they'd drive 50 miles to the nearest Catholic church.
Uh-huh.
And that impressed me, so I've always wanted to know more about the Catholic. That's what I used to tell the people, our good example. You know, we're Christian, we're all Christians. In fact, I myself try to use the word Christian, not just Catholic, but say we're, because sometimes people who are not Catholic say, the Catholics are not Christians. They're not Christians. Mm. And I'm sure we're Christians. Who founded us? Christ, Jesus Christ. And we carry his name. But I often, in speeches and talks and sermons, I use Christian Catholic. We are Christian Catholics or Catholic Christians, whatever way you like, but I like to sneak the word Christian in there.
Right.
Because all the Protestants and ourselves, we're all one great big church. Some don't have broken off from what we call the main body under the Pope, but they're still Christians, still believe in Jesus Christ. And that's very encouraging. That's good. It's nice. And as long as we worship the God we believe in, if we practice what we preach, okay, there's a bunch of Protestants having a big convention right here in the hotel now.
Right.
You see them on the first floor, mm-hmm. and they're dressed to kill. Boy, when they go to church, they're not like us Catholics. I hate to see people come to church in shorts on Sunday. But these people, the ladies coming into
I noticed.
Big hats,
yeah.
You know, hats, boy, yeah. And on Sunday too, wherever they are, they dress for church, boy.
Right.
That's a good example for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Father Kennedy, you know, when you were, what types of changes did you see in the church or in the country from the time from 1949 through the 50s and 60s? Were there any significant changes that occurred in life? And
well, it changes. Traveling changes, but there's been a lot of, I'd say, the faith has cooled off a little. A lot of what we used to call fervent Catholics don't go to church anymore. And that hurts. We're not getting vocations, young boys who want to go to the seminary and become priests. That's really for, when I was ordained, there were 17 of us in our year. This year we had 2 men ordained in our principal house in Philadelphia, where I live now. But they're Latinos. Mm-hmm. One is El Salvador and the other is Mexican. Mm-hmm. No gringos. And we have not one single gringo in our seminary now. Mm. When I was in seminary, we had 75, more or less 65, 70 guys in our major seminary the last 4 years before ordination. Mm-hmm. It's like 4 years after college.
Okay.
What we call graduate school.
Graduate school, yeah.
Specializing in theology. Mm-hmm. But now we've closed that building. We don't even have a seminary anymore.
Wow.
We have no candidates.
Uh-huh.
And that's affected the church all around. But thank the Lord, the Latino Catholics are a little more fervent in their mm-hmm. religious practice than we are, than mm-hmm. we Americans. And a lot of boys, we have a good bunch of kids that maybe 15 or 20 on their way up through college mm-hmm. towards their ordination and priesthood. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've had the heartbreaks both sides, Americans and Latino boys, ordained priests who will fall in love with somebody and, you know, they hang up, take the collar off and go get married. Mm-hmm. That hurts to see that because we believe we give a guy enough training and bang into them the solemnity of their vows. Mm-hmm. You're making a vow to God and to yourself. If you don't keep your own word, you got to think about what you're doing. And so we urge them and keep telling them to be faithful to your vows. And that's a big, it's happening. Even the New York Times this past week, mm-hmm. an article in it. Less people getting religious marriages now, much dropped all over the country. It's dropped
off. Oh, really?
The number of people who get married in church anymore.
Uh-huh.
Everybody going to the JP, and that's it.
Mm.
So that, and we're affected that. We're part of the general population. And that certainly affects us in a lot of, sometimes. And it's surprising, for my part, I always looked at girls and ladies, they're all so holy, and we guys are a bunch of bums. And I'm finding that the guys are more fervent in their religion than the girls.
Oh, really?
Seems like, the girls are, they go running after the men, you know, whether it's just plain old sex or is it real love or they want to have a family. But with the, and a lot of times the girl wants to get married, but by the justice of the peace.
Oh, not in the church.
Not in church. Mm-hmm. And that's falling off. Mm-hmm. And that's affecting the church all over Latin America, to parts of the world. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's on the, it's growing.
And another thing, it seems interesting to hear about, it seems like more Protestant denominations are making inroads into Latin America.
Yes.
Is that something that you've seen?
Oh, yes.
Why is that?
Well, for every one of our Catholic priests that have moved, come out of the States, I'd say there are 10 Protestant missionaries to preaching the word in their little churches. And a bunch of college kids, Catholics are doing that too. That's where they're finally woken up. Mm. The college comes down and spend a month or two or all summer vacation, mm-hmm. teaching kids, preaching religion, knocking on doors, and it's happening all over. So we're doing that too. That's the kind of mission work I've been doing for the last 30 years. They sent me up 1980. They sent back 25 years to the States to do that, knocking on doors around the States in the Spanish sectors of the cities. And we're doing it down here too. Mm-hmm. It's surprising how many good people are anxious to take part in, and especially like all I mentioned, so many marriages, American man and Panamanian wife, the wives want to be missionaries, and the kids too.
Wow.
And that's encouraging.
Yeah.
So, but still it's sort of a battle, who's going to win? But you don't blame them, but you could say that somehow they're doing it for God, the glory of God, sure. Mm-hmm. And they thank the Lord they're learning what we believe, the one true God, and they're not becoming Muslims or some of those other strange Oriental religions which go counter to our culture. But it's coming along. It's mm-hmm. growing, yeah.
Okay. What are some of your fondest memories of those early years in Panama as a young priest?
Mostly of them, they all involved the people, because mm-hmm. I was living, we used to get a month off every year to go back home. My home's in Albany, New York. A-W-B-N-Y, Albany.
Yeah.
But I have so many little stories, the kind of stories I wouldn't tell in church.
Right.
But we have a lot of fun, a lot of good people, and they're willing to share their lives with us. And they're used to our Catholic traditions of getting married in church and sending their kids to catechism classes, not just Sunday morning, mm-hmm. but during the week too. And we have our Catholic schools. We have St. Mary's there in Balboa, which is always going very good. And most of the kids there are now Panamanians. And they're learning good, and we have good teachers. Mm-hmm. It used to be the Sisters of Mercy from Brooklyn, and they're all with a Brooklyn accent, and the kids were learning English with a Brooklyn accent.
That's great.
New York, and they get awakened. Yeah. Well, one story which I wouldn't tell in church. The Sister Superior, when I was down to our St. Mary, when I was still there 20 years ago, 4:30, 8 o'clock in the morning before classes, I was in the lobby of the school there, the kids coming into, and one of the nuns, the principal of the school, she called me, Father, thank you, Lord. His Father. Yes, Sister. XYZ. XYZ, what's that? Examine your zipper. First time a nun ever told me my fly was open.
Oh, no, whoops.
But they were great, and they've all gone back to the States now. They're still working as teachers mm-hmm. in Long Island and Brooklyn.
Okay.
New York, you know.
New York, yeah.
But experiences with them that have been good. It says here, How did you interface with the military? Well, through the chaplains. Mm-hmm. And the chaplains would often invite one of us and go and speak to their English-speaking military congregations, certainly, and give, like, I've often had three-day retreats, a weekend, Friday night till Sunday night. Mm-hmm. All that was Saturday and most of the day Sunday, and for the lay people. Mm-hmm. With the assistance of the military chaplain. And the same thing for the Panamanian. They had for years what they call the Cursillo movement, a little course in Christian doctrine. Mm-hmm. And that's grown all over Spain, began in Spain. Mm-hmm. I made my Cursillo. Once you make your Cursillo, it's a four-day retreat from a Thursday evening until Sunday afternoon. And you get all the basic truths of religion pounded into your head, and some good recreation times also, and exchanging ideas. And that was a real good touch with the Panamanian people. And how important was Panamanian culture in your life? Plenty of people, I wear my Panama, where is it? My Panama flag and my American flag. And I was happy yesterday when I came in the bus from the airport, and it's all way up on the top floor of the hotel.
All right, yeah.
Panama and the North American flag hanging outside it. Yeah. And really
celebrate. Together, yeah.
And so with the, I think it's grown our love, you could call it love, respect for Panamanians people, and them for us also has grown since the separation of the governments. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that's the way it always should have been that way. But of course, what did they do? At the beginning, they were more or less forced to build a canal with American built and American ran and American jobs. And then, but they continued on, that came and grew and grew and grew. And now it's the workers on the Panama Canal, the people who actually run that canal, they're great, they know their business, they're good at it. They do a lot of, come out real good, got engineering, and they've got the Panamanian, like the University of Panama, have courses geared towards the mechanics that are involved in operating the canal, constructing mm-hmm. such a canal. And now this widening, which is going to go on for another 10 years. Mm-hmm. And that's all being done by Panamanians. Mm-hmm. There are some bosses because I think it's a Japanese, one of the big firms are Japanese engineers. Mm-hmm. So I don't think the Panamanians are going to learn Japanese, but but it. So for me, I really like the Panamanian people very much. Uh-huh. All my friends, my Christmas card list is 90% Panamanian.
Panamanian, okay.
And just walking around here, they'll yell it to me in Spanish or in English, but I really like them. They're good people, they're nice, plain ordinary people.
Father Kenny, I was also, it just occurred to me to ask you this question. What kind of impact or did the Second Vatican Council have on the church in Panama in the 60s?
Well, a lot of people I think the church has awakened, been awakened. The church was, it's a typical Spanish established church for 400 years, and they don't stop that very easily. They have their tradition, their devotion to the saints, mm-hmm. which we approve. But we tell them, the saint, no saint is God. Mm-hmm. He's a good friend of God, and that's why we pray to them. And it's normal human nature to respect people whom you admire, and we admire the saints. And so you just can't push them off or make fun of them, because a lot of them died to defend the faith they believe in, and they died, and for their deaths, they say this, the blood of martyrs is the seed of Christians. Mm-hmm. And wherever there have been people killed for the faith, like not so much in Panama, but there have been priests murdered in Panama. Father, what's his name?
Oh, right. Starts with a G, I think.
Up there in El Valle. Oh, I know.
Oh,
Hector. Garcia, Hector, but then the Padre Hector, Colombian, mm-hmm. he was He was shot not because he, well, because he was a priest. His parish was Santiago, Veraguas. Some guy shot him because he didn't, because he was trying to get the barkeepers not to sell booze to the teenagers. And he defending the young people. Mm-hmm. And they called him the Defensor de la Juventud, defender. But he was that. So there have been martyrs in Panama, but in other countries where there have been martyrs, Mexico, several hundred Mexican priests and nuns were martyred there in the 1920s. And lately in Colombia also, mm-hmm. the priest who dared preach against the narcotráfico, oh boy. We have a bishop working with us in the States now, and he was bishop of the eastern part of Colombia on the border with Venezuela. Mm-hmm. And but he was trying to clear out the drug business, and the narco-traffic cantantes came to him. They, Padre, Excelencia, if you utter one more sermon like that, you're dead. Mm. So what can you, he left Colombia. He's been up there 10 years. He's working, he's a Vincentian father, but he's working with us in around New York area, and mainly with Hispanics on Long Island. Mm-hmm. All with Hispanic people, a lot of Colombian. They love him because he's Colombian himself. So there is persecution. And in Colombia itself, several priests and bishops have been killed by the, but aside from that, it really, the blood of martyrs is the seed of Christians. And these deaths have brought a resurgence of the faith. It's just a natural consequence.
Did you know Archbishop Romero in?
Romero, he was killed. Yeah, I knew him. Mm-hmm. He was Bishop of El Salvador. Mm-hmm. I knew him well. In fact, I was at a meeting that he was at, and Bishop McGrath, when I mentioned before, was there also.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was killed shortly, saying mass. He was at the altar, as one of the military guys. He said he was doing what his superior told him to do. He came to the church, went stood in the middle aisle at the back door of the church, and with a rifle, killed Bishop right through the heart while he was saying mass. In a place like El Salvador, because we say it's muy católico. we love our Catholics, so we're going to make more saints.
Yeah,
something wow. like that.
Mm. Well, Father Kennedy, I know you have a busy schedule at the reunion, and a lot of people want to talk to you. So, do you have any? Is there anything you wanted to talk about that we haven't had a chance to talk about so far?
Well, mostly, the theme comes to my mind on occasions like this is to let people know that the Panamanian people, just because they drove us out, they love us. Mm-hmm. It's the Panamanian. Some politicians are a little bit, we don't want to come out publicly against them, they'll be shooting me. But the Panamanian people love the Americans. And look at all the marriages, very mm-hmm. happy, happy marriages mixed between Panamanian. It's usually the other way around, Panamanian girl marries an American boy. But there's some very good Panamanian men who have married American women mm-hmm. and working out beautifully because they just seem to get along well. And that's my main message would be, I love Panama, and I spend most of my life there. And if they want me to go back, I'm ready to go anytime. Mm-hmm. But that's the bulk of it. Love for Panama and willingness to help them that they need help too when they need help. Mm-hmm. But Panama is not as badly off as the other country. They're not coming in great droves to the States, all the border trouble we're having right now.
Yeah.
Where they're from impoverished people who have nothing.
Yeah.
But thank God Panama has been blessed by God with an economy that's pretty steady.
Yeah, I remember when I was there in the 80s, there was such a difference between Panama and, say, Honduras, night and day.
Yeah.
Night and day. Well, thank you so much, Father Kennedy, for I really appreciate you taking the time out.